This month, the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission completes the public comment period on a proposal by Enbridge Energy to rebuild its Line 3 pipeline across northern Minnesota. The current line has transported Canadian crude oil across northern Minnesota since 1968. Enbridge wants to shut down that part of the line that runs from Clearbrook across northern Minnesota on a route that mostly follows Highway 2. The company's preferred new route would run south from Clearbrook through Hubbard County, then east through Cass, Crow Wing, Aiken, and Carlton counties, ending up at refineries in Superior, Wisconsin, and beyond. The public comment period ends on Wednesday, November 22nd. The commission will rule on the need for the pipeline and the route sometime next year. In the meantime, six Minnesota bands of Chippewa in northern Minnesota are drafting their own assessment of the impact of Line 3 and other large infrastructure projects on tribal hunting, fishing, and gathering rights in treaty territories. These rights were first established in treaties in 1837, 1854, and 1855, and were upheld in Supreme Court decisions in the 1980s and 90s. Frank Bebo is a tribal attorney for the 1855 Treaty Authority. I asked him to tell us about the scope of the tribe's assessment.
What we're putting together is what we call an Anishinaabe-centric cumulative impact assessment. We're looking at the impacts from various kinds of large infrastructure projects and how they impact Minnesota, as opposed to an environmental impact study like they're doing for the pipeline. When you look at the environmental impact study, they look at river crossings, they look at a 200-foot, half-mile corridor in different places, and they're just looking to see what kind of environmental damage may or may not come from that. And then they have some extra parts where they talk about greenhouse gases and climate change, but not very much. Climate change affects walleye and lakes in complex ways. And so Mille Lac Lake is the canary in the mine. And if we are suddenly switching from a walleye lake to a bass lake, and questions about what that means for the economy down there. I know, as a person who lives up here, that all those fishermen who put that pressure on that lake, if those walleye aren't there, then they're going to move up to Sandy Lake. They're going to move up to Winnebagoche. They're going to move up here to Pokegama. They're going to go over to Leech. What that does is puts pressure on our resources rather than resolving the issue. And so what I see is that the state of Minnesota, whether it's the PCA or the DNR, they say all these things are bad, but because of the way the state laws are, it enables bad things to still happen. They want to facilitate business development. And so you end up with these competing mindsets here in Minnesota. At one point, the legislature talked about eliminating the sulfate standard for wild rice. They can't even do that legally. It's already established, and it's now federal law with the EPA, and so now you see where they're trying to go through a different process and call it a different sulfide and different things because they still want to change it. It's still in their way, and that's where our rights come in because wild rice is not only the most important central part of our culture, but because those words are recorded in the 1837 treaty, and it's really most important part maybe of our religious part of our culture, that the American Indians Religious Freedoms Act, I think, is also a protection for wild rice environmentally. And I think that we're going to be able to protect our waters in ways that other people aren't because of some of the recent federal decisions that recognize that when we made treaties, we said water is important. We rely on fish. We rely on wild rice. And I think it's going to come down to those treaty interpretations and understandings.
Now, in 1999, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the Mille Lacs Band's hunting, fishing, and gathering rights. Is that decision kind of the basis for your work now?
The Mille Lacs decision basically boils down to what did the Indians understand at the time of the treaties? So we understood that we had the right to control our own commercial hunting, fishing, and gathering, and that we were in the international marketplace with the French and the English and the United States in different places. So that's where we start with our rights. When you look at the other part that was upheld in the Mille Lacs decision, we also have a right to earn a modest living from these activities in the same ceded territory. And so when you look at the 1854 agreement or the tri-band agreement with the state where they're paying like $15 million a year to not have commercial activity exercised off reservation, those are our property rights. And so they understand that we have rights that they can't abrogate. Only Congress can. And so the way they have to do it is to negotiate financially. And if it costs them money, then they want to try to avoid that. And that's what they want to do with pipeline abandonment as well. They see every little negative cost as a burden they don't even want to discuss. For us, as a cumulative impact assessment, I look at the oil spill that happened here in 1991 a mile away. I look at what happened in Cohasset in 2002 on the 4th of July. I look at what happened in Clearwater when the place exploded. You know, I look at Kalamazoo. And so we have to design laws that are not set up the way the state has to facilitate what's going on. Our way is no build. If it's going to be bad for us, no matter what you're doing, say it's going to be bad for us, so we can't do it.
Well, now, the Minnesota Department of Commerce concluded that Line 3 pipeline is not needed, which is basically saying no build. I'm sure you agree with that. How would you interpret that decision?
I think they're working a lot harder at doing the right thing than they were 3 years ago.
So is there a way a project like the Line 3 pipeline could be Anishinaabe-centric? In other words, could it be built? Or is basically no build the only outcome from the Anishinaabe's point of view?
I think it's going to be a no build, and I think it's going to be a remove the pipe, at least in places
where...
The old Line 3. Right now, we're at a real tipping point, I think, for Minnesota, because we believe this is the last pipeline fight in Minnesota. And if it is the last pipeline fight, then we need to make sure that abandonment is addressed now while Enbridge is on.
Abandonment?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Because otherwise, Enbridge is going to say, fine, we'll just walk away and we'll just run oil as long as we can. That's what they did at Red Lake with their trespass for 40 years or so, and then finally settled it out for about $18.5 million. They had a lease that expired with Fond du Lac, same kind of a thing, where they just keep pumping the oil. And even though a couple of the bands in Wisconsin, I think Bad River and Red Cliff, are talking about telling Enbridge, we're not renewing your leases, Enbridge is still going to pump oil through there until someone can make them stop. They don't want people there in their way. They want you to go to court and get a lawyer and deal with this civilly over a few years for millions of dollars.
We're speaking with Leech Lake Tribal Attorney Frank Bebo about how Northern Minnesota Chippewa bands plan to defend their hunting, fishing, and gathering rights in territories ceded to the federal government in 19th century treaties. Those territories include a large part of north central and northwestern Minnesota, and the planning by the bands is a response to the state of Minnesota's Public Utility Commission Line 3 oil pipeline permitting process that's going on right now. Frank, how would you describe the band's legal standing in the permitting process?
When you look at, in particular, I would say Leech Lake and Fond du Lac, you have existing pipelines, a pipeline that they are proposing be abandoned and left behind. And when you cross into a reservation, the most recent court decisions talk about our rights being exclusive from the state of Minnesota. Well, exclusive is helpful. That means Minnesota understands that they can't just say for us. The problem is when you look at being exclusive, it means even if you have an agreement in place, you can't rely on it. And that would be the walleye agreement that they had at Mille Lacs Lake, and they still went back for more walleye after the resort owners complained. And then when you look at what happened with the Fond du Lac moose hunt, they said there's enough out of the group of moose to take 25 moose, and the state said, well, hold on. Well, those parties can only go to court and sue each other. And so that's what happened with the Sandpiper. Look at even having exclusive rights that are recognized federally, you still end up with problems where people would rather make you litigate rather than do the right thing. What does tribal consultation mean? In the real sense, the word, when we say no, should mean no. But to them it means, well, how about if we change it a little bit like this? Is this better? And it's like, no. And it's like, well, how about if we do it this way? It's like, no. The first question is it really necessary? Mm-hmm. And that's our argument. You know, the usage in Minnesota has dropped 20% in the last 20 years. The product really doesn't come to Minnesota. It goes to Superior and goes to other places. So why are we looking at this project right now? And what is the real long-term benefit, especially if we don't have anything built into it for how we're going to clean up these other 8 abandoned pipelines in the future? And so they're hoping they don't have to. They're hoping they don't have to adjust how they deal with us. But I think they're going to have to, because we're not only the reservations here looking at a cumulative impact assessment, but we're also working with what we call a Line 3 Treaty Alliance that goes up into Canada. And we're also working with other tribes in other parts of the United States, because these problems are really handling the same way. So when we look at environmental justice, we can't rely on the Corps of Engineers. we can't rely on the state. All we can rely on is the greedy people at the big oil are going to be the way they are, and we have to be prepared to combat that and make our laws different than the state law, because the state laws aren't meant to protect the environment. They look for the most acceptable level of degradation.
Can you imagine that the Line 3 process, permitting process, could lead to something like what we saw in North Dakota?
I think it has all the markings. I don't know why it won't. It wasn't resolved in North Dakota in a good way. So the question becomes, is it the crazy environmentalists and tribal members trying to preserve their homeland the problem, or is it big oil thinking, no, we still got to get a pipeline in someplace? Yeah, there might be some conflict.
Tribal attorney Frank Bebo. He spoke with us about the Minnesota Chippewa tribe's strategy to defend hunting, fishing, and gathering rights in treaty territories in northern Minnesota. The Minnesota Public Utilities public comment period for the Line 3 project ends Wednesday, November 22nd. Public comments can be made online at mn.gov/PUC, and the commission will rule on the need for the pipeline and the route sometime next year.